Have you ever wondered why happiness seems so elusive, even when you achieve your goals? A promotion at work, a new relationship, or that long-awaited vacation might bring momentary joy, but the satisfaction quickly fades. This pattern isn't a modern phenomenon. It was recognized over 2,300 years ago by the Stoic philosophers, who developed a revolutionary approach to human flourishing that continues to influence millions today. From Silicon Valley executives to NFL coaches, military leaders to Hollywood celebrities like Tim Ferriss and Kristen Bell, Stoicism has experienced a remarkable resurgence as people search for meaning and tranquility in our chaotic world. A Handbook for New Stoics distills this ancient wisdom into practical exercises, offering a path to the one thing truly within our control, our character. Unlike other self-help approaches that merely help you feel better, Stoicism aims to help you actually be better, a distinction that makes this philosophy uniquely powerful in transforming lives. We constantly stake our happiness on outcomes beyond our control, promotions, relationships, social approval, and feel inadequate when these don't materialize. Worse, things we specifically don't want often do happen, from minor inconveniences like traffic jams and canceled flights to serious setbacks like illness or financial trouble. By continuing to bet our well-being on external outcomes, we're making poor wagers with our happiness, essentially gambling with loaded dice that frequently roll against us. Consider Mike at his 25-year college reunion, comparing himself to seemingly successful classmates. His failed marriage, financial troubles, physical decline, and career stagnation leave him feeling like a failure. Looking in the bathroom mirror after cocktails, he concludes his unhappiness stems from his circumstances. Everything is awful. This illustrates how we stake our happiness on external factors beyond our control, setting ourselves up for inevitable disappointment. What Mike doesn't see is that his classmates likely harbor their own deep insecurities and struggles, despite outward appearances of success. What if instead we trained ourselves to desire only what's firmly within our control? Then we'd always get what we want, never get what we don't want, and our happiness would remain secure. This is the fundamental insight of Stoicism, that shaping our character is the only thing truly under our control. When we face setbacks, we can control our response. When opportunities arise, we can control our effort. When challenges emerge, we can control our attitude and approach. External achievements rarely satisfy us for long. We eat great food without noticing the taste, take new possessions for granted, and find new anxieties even in success. A promotion brings higher stress, a new house requires constant maintenance, and wealth often creates more worries about preservation than joy. What determines whether we use our advantages well is character. People with poor character misuse external advantages, while those with good character use whatever they have beneficially. Consider lottery winners who squander their fortune versus those who use it wisely for lasting benefit. Through rational introspection and daily practice, we can mold our character over time, a guaranteed win with the biggest payoff. This involves regular self-examination, conscious choice in how we respond to events, and persistent effort to align our actions with our values. This doesn't mean we stop caring about external outcomes, but that we deeply understand we cannot guarantee they'll turn out as we wish. Instead of anxiously trying to control the uncontrollable, we focus our energy on what we can influence, our judgments, our responses, and our actions. This understanding leads to ataraxia, serenity, the state of tranquility that comes from aligning our desires with what's truly in our power. It's like finding solid ground in stormy waters. External circumstances may rage around us, but our inner peace remains steady because it's anchored in what we can actually control. This state isn't passive resignation, but active engagement with life from a place of wisdom and emotional stability. Stoicism began around 300 BCE with Zeno of Citium, whose transformative journey from wealthy merchant to philosopher started when he lost his entire fortune in a shipwreck. Finding himself stranded in Athens, Zeno discovered philosophy in a bookshop and began studying under various teachers. The school he eventually founded was named for the Stoa Poikile, Painted Porch, a public colonnade adorned with murals depicting great Athenian victories where he and his followers gathered for philosophical discussions. As Athens' political influence waned and Rome's empire expanded, Stoicism found fertile ground in Roman culture, particularly flourishing under four influential figures whose writings form the cornerstone of Stoic literature. Seneca, a wealthy Roman senator and advisor to Emperor Nero, wrote extensively on practical philosophy while navigating treacherous political waters. Musonius Rufus, known as the Roman Socrates, earned fame as a teacher who emphasized the practical application of philosophy in daily life. Epictetus, who rose from slavery to become one of history's most influential philosophical teachers, founded his own school and influenced countless students, including the future emperor Marcus Aurelius. Aurelius himself, the philosopher king, recorded his personal reflections in Meditations, writing by candlelight during military campaigns to maintain his philosophical practice while ruling the empire. Though the formal school dissolved by the 3rd century CE, Stoic ideas profoundly shaped Western thought, influencing Christianity, Renaissance humanism, and modern psychology. The connection to contemporary cognitive behavioral therapy is particularly striking. Both approaches emphasize the role of thoughts in determining emotional responses and behavior. Today, Stoicism attracts a diverse global following, from business leaders to military personnel, who find its practical wisdom relevant to modern challenges. The core tenets of Stoicism can be distilled into three fundamental concepts, each building upon the others. First, living according to nature requires understanding human nature as both rational and social. This means using reason to improve not just individual lives, but the broader community. Seneca emphasized this through his famous advice to bring the mind to bear upon your problems, suggesting that rational analysis should guide our responses to life's challenges. The three disciplines provide a practical framework for implementing Stoic principles. The discipline of desire, orexis, teaches us to align our wants with nature's reality, helping us distinguish between productive and unproductive desires. The discipline of action, horme, guides our behavior in the social sphere, emphasizing justice, kindness, and civic duty. The discipline of assent, sunkatathesis, develops our ability to evaluate impressions critically, preventing hasty judgments and emotional reactions. The dichotomy of control stands as Stoicism's central insight and practical tool. This concept, particularly emphasized in Epictetus's teachings, divides all things into two categories: those under our control, our thoughts, judgments, and intentions, and those not under our control, external events, others' opinions, and natural phenomena. This distinction forms the foundation for Stoic peace of mind. By focusing energy exclusively on what we can influence while accepting what we cannot, we free ourselves from unnecessary anxiety and frustration. The discipline of desire focuses on training ourselves in what to want and what to avoid, ensuring we don't fail to get what we truly desire or fall into what we should avoid. Epictetus considered this the chief and most urgent discipline, as our affects, emotions, arise from failing to obtain what we desire or encountering what we wish to avoid. When we feel anxious about outcomes we can't control, like Alice worrying about her performance review despite doing well at work, we're misplacing our desires. Instead of desiring the promotion, which depends on factors beyond our control, we should desire to put forward our best effort. Rather than fearing failure, we should focus on doing our best in every moment. This shift in perspective doesn't happen overnight. It requires practice, like taking an outside view of our troubles. Robert excels at comforting others, but struggles to gain perspective on his own problems. Epictetus points out our tendency to respond differently to others' misfortunes, such as the lot of man, versus our own, "Alas, miserable am I." By addressing ourselves in the second or third person, we create psychological distance from our problems, allowing for clearer thinking and better self-guidance. Another powerful practice involves taking another's perspective when feeling wronged. Felix becomes angry at a bank teller's curtness without considering the teller's own frustrations. Marcus Aurelius advises that when someone wrongs us, we should examine what notions of good and evil motivated their actions. This helps us overcome the fundamental attribution error, our tendency to attribute others' actions to character flaws while explaining our own behavior through circumstances. Physical discomfort often leads to emotional upset, but we can train ourselves to maintain composure despite hunger, cold, or other discomforts. Musonius Rufus taught that both mind and body require training, as they influence each other. By practicing with minor physical hardships, going without a coat in cold weather, fasting briefly, sleeping on a hard surface, we build character and prepare ourselves to face involuntary hardships with equanimity. The Stoics developed powerful techniques for building resilience, including premeditatio malorum, premeditation of adversity. This practice involves mentally rehearsing potential difficulties to reduce their emotional impact when they occur. Modern psychology confirms this works. It's similar to exposure therapy, where gradual exposure to feared situations reduces anxiety. Implementation intentions help prepare for potential obstacles by identifying daily goals, possible impediments, and specific responses to maintain equanimity. Another approach shifts focus to others' misfortunes, reminding yourself that similar adversities could happen to you. The most powerful method is imaginative premeditation, vividly imagining unwanted situations happening to you in real time, starting with minor difficulties and working up to more challenging scenarios. When negative emotions narrow our focus, the view from above meditation helps broaden perspective. Marcus Aurelius frequently used this technique while facing wars, plagues, and rebellions. The practice doesn't magically solve problems, but changes how we relate to them. By contemplating the vastness of time, expanding awareness through spatial dimensions, or comparing your problems to greater historical hardships, you interrupt the narrowing effect of passions like anxiety and anger. Cosmic meditation helps when we feel the universe is working against us. Albert, stranded at an airport during a snowstorm that prevents him from reuniting with his family after a 10-month deployment, might benefit from contemplating his place in the cosmos. Whether there's fatal necessity, providence, or confusion without a director, we still have our ruling intelligence to guide us. When facing difficulties, contemplating our place in the cosmos provides perspective. We're all made of stardust, part of something much larger. The words we use to describe our experiences significantly impact our emotions. The Stoics advise reserving good only for virtue and bad only for vice. Everything else should be considered preferred indifference, like health or wealth, or dispreferred indifference, like illness or poverty. This perspective helps maintain emotional equilibrium, since external circumstances are outside our control, while virtue remains within it. The discipline of action focuses on how Stoics behave in response to external situations, particularly when dealing with other people. While the discipline of desire taught us to reduce desires for externals, this section guides us in performing appropriate actions while maintaining inner tranquility. When pursuing goals, we risk putting our mental well-being at the mercy of chance. Epictetus teaches that we should always have two objectives: completing our intended task and maintaining inner calm. While we may not always succeed at the first, since it's not entirely under our control, we can always succeed at the second if we prepare mentally. In our culture, busyness often serves as a badge of pride, but Seneca warns against this mindset. Time, once spent, can never be recovered, making it our most precious resource. The Stoic approach questions whether our busy lives truly focus on what matters most. We should plan each day as if it were our last, focusing on what truly matters. Epictetus advises us to be silent for the most part and when we do speak, to say only what's necessary and meaningful. While small talk has its place in social bonding, we should aim to elevate our conversations to more substantive topics that improve us as people and increase our awareness of important issues. Speaking less and listening more helps us learn from others while making conversations more inclusive and interesting. For Stoics, friendship is serious business, not the superficial connections of social networks, but meaningful relationships that foster mutual growth. This doesn't mean ranking everyone by virtue and only associating with the best, but rather recognizing which companionships are mutually beneficial versus destructive. The Stoic approach to insults involves understanding the three-step process. Someone says something offensive, you take it as offensive, and you react. Only the middle step is under your control. The Stoic response offers two options. Either be like a rock and do nothing, which nullifies the insult's purpose, or use self-deprecating humor to disarm your opponent. By not reacting defensively, you demonstrate that you aren't controlled by others' opinions while potentially extracting constructive criticism from the interaction. Anger presents perhaps the greatest challenge to Stoic practice. Seneca describes it as temporary madness that progresses through three phases: a pre-reflective involuntary response, a cognitive recognition phase, and finally, full surrender to rage. The critical moment for intervention is during the second phase, before we lose rational control. Seneca advises countering anger by concealing its symptoms and deliberately adopting opposite behaviors, maintaining a composed countenance, speaking more mildly, and walking more slowly. This approach recognizes that our outward behavior can influence our internal emotional state, allowing us to regain control before anger masters us. When dealing with frustrating people, Marcus Aurelius offers 10 principles. Remember, we're made for cooperation. Consider others' guiding principles. Recognize wrongdoing comes from ignorance. Acknowledge our own fallibility. Avoid judgment without sufficient knowledge. Remember life's brevity. Understand our opinions cause distress, not others' actions. Recognize our reactions often cause more damage than the triggering event. Correct others gently without irony. And don't expect people to never do wrong, but don't allow them to harm others. Just as athletes seek the strongest opponents to improve their skills, we should embrace life's challenges as opportunities to develop virtue. Seneca uses the gym metaphor to illustrate that serious athletes don't avoid difficulties but actively seek them out to become better competitors. Similarly, every circumstance we face is a chance to test and improve our character. Any ship captain appears competent in calm waters. It's the storm that both tests and develops true skill. How can we bridge the gap between understanding Stoic theory and actually living virtuously? According to the Stoics, the answer lies in practice, specifically by choosing a role model to guide our behavior. This technique involves imagining a sage figure observing your actions and providing feedback. Your role model can be anyone who embodies the virtues you wish to develop, a friend, relative, historical figure, or even a fictional character. The discipline of ascent represents the advanced stage of Stoic practice, helping practitioners move from beginner to advanced proficient, one who makes progress. This discipline helps internalize Stoic precepts through careful attention to impressions. Epictetus teaches us to confront every harsh impression with the recognition that it is but an impression and not at all what you seem to be. This practice involves pausing when encountering something that seems very desirable or undesirable to say, "This is just my first impression. It may not be as it appears." The second step is applying the dichotomy of control by asking whether the object of desire or aversion lies within complete control. If not, remind yourself, "It's nothing to you," or "My character's more important than this." This doesn't mean externals like relationships or food are worthless. They're preferred indifference that you may reasonably want without attaching your worth to them. We all develop mental habits that can be as difficult to break as physical ones. Marcus Aurelius identified four problematic moods that require vigilant attention: needless fancy, dwelling on things unrelated to our nature as rational beings, antisocial behavior, anything detrimental to harmonious social life, insincerity, speaking or acting without truly believing what you're saying, and giving in to physical urges contrary to reason. We all speak to ourselves in our head, and the Stoics believed rehearsing their concepts mentally would help them arise automatically with time. Seneca acknowledges he's still an imperfect practitioner, not yet wise, but a student like us. He uses the powerful analogy of dyeing cloth to explain how some ideas take longer to steep in our souls than others. The more we train ourselves in virtuous thinking, the easier it becomes, a principle supported by modern cognitive behavioral therapy research. When life becomes overwhelming, we need not seek physical retreats. We can withdraw into our own minds, the ultimate sanctuary available to us at all times. Marcus Aurelius teaches that this inner citadel offers immediate respite from life's troubles, provided we arm ourselves with ready strategies for whatever disturbs our peace. Like a well-fortified castle, our mind can become an impregnable fortress against external disturbances when properly trained. For dealing with others' bad behavior, remember we exist to help each other, and people do wrong out of ignorance, not malice. When someone cuts you off in traffic or a colleague speaks harshly, consider that they may be struggling with unseen battles. Just as a child who hasn't learned better might break something valuable, people often act poorly because they lack understanding, not because they intend harm. When bodily troubles arise, reflect on our connection to the cosmos. Your headache or back pain is merely atoms and energy flowing through the universal system, neither good nor bad in itself. For concerns about fame or others' opinions, consider the immensity of time and space, making human judgments seem insignificant. Think of how many emperors and celebrities have been forgotten by history. In 1,000 years, who will remember today's social media influencers or corporate leaders? Even the greatest achievements become footnotes in time's vast expanse. Anxiety fixates our minds on negative possibilities while blinding us to the present moment's relative safety. Seneca offers a three-step approach. First, ground yourself in the present using mindfulness techniques. Feel your breath, notice your surroundings, count your heartbeats. Second, clearly articulate your worry and examine it critically. Write it down, break it into components, assess its likelihood. Finally, ask whether your current worrying serves any purpose. If it suggests practical actions, develop a plan with a reserve clause. I will do this, fate permitting. If not, deliberately set the worry aside through focused distraction or physical activity. When desires persist despite our best efforts to moderate them, we can employ Marcus Aurelius's technique of objective redescription. The practice involves stripping away value judgments and emotional language when describing objects of desire. That sumptuous feast becomes animal carcasses and plant matter arranged on plates. The luxurious sports car becomes metal and plastic shaped into a transportation device. This technique works because value exists only in our judgments, not in external things themselves. By seeing things as they truly are, we reduce their emotional pull over us. The Stoic curriculum hinges on studying physics, logic, and ethics, examining facts, applying sound reasoning, and living ethically. Marcus Aurelius teaches us to scientifically test everything by stripping impressions down to their core components, considering their duration, and examining which virtues they engage. When faced with a challenging situation, ask, what are the bare facts? How long will this truly matter? What virtues, courage, justice, temperance, wisdom, can I practice here? This rational approach helps us see things objectively and connect them to the cosmos, transforming our perspective from narrow self-interest to universal understanding. Having explored the three Stoic disciplines, it's time to design your own ongoing practice. The process begins with reviewing which exercises were most helpful for your individual circumstances. Epictetus clearly states that the discipline of desire should be the starting point for Stoic practice, as making progress in this area is a necessary precondition for the other disciplines. Without mastering desires and aversions, the mind remains ruled by passions rather than reason. After choosing a discipline, select exercises based on their timing indicators: set time, occasional, or constant. The key is simplicity, choosing only one or two practices at a time, typically one set time exercise for consistency and one occasional practice for daily life application. Alice, who struggles with work anxiety, might choose acting the opposite to her anxiety as her occasional exercise and imaginative premeditation for her set time practice. Progression through the disciplines should be guided by assessing improvement against each discipline's goals. For the discipline of desire, the goal is reducing desires for externals and transferring aversions from externals to internals. For the discipline of action, it's acting intentionally and pro-socially. Perfect mastery isn't required before moving to the next discipline, but significant improvement is recommended. While practice remains essential, theory provides the foundation that prevents Stoicism from becoming merely a collection of techniques. Stoicism is a comprehensive philosophy of life that provides guidance on how to choose one's purposes. The growing literature on Stoicism, from new translations of ancient texts to modern commentaries and contemporary applications, demonstrates its resurgence as a viable philosophical alternative. Stoic practice thrives in community. Online forums, local meetup groups, and annual conferences provide ongoing support for a lifetime of Stoic practice and flourishing. By consistently applying these principles, we can achieve serenity regardless of circumstances, as we focus only on what's truly good, our judgments, rather than externals we cannot control.